Hey, last week we ended a series called Conflict is Opportunity, or Navigating Conflict. And we ended, one of the things that we did last Sunday was we had two kind of areas up front here. One in which you could release things that you were maybe holding on to around conflict that you needed to let go of. And then we had another area over here that let you receive. And I just grabbed a couple of the cards off that receive board, and I just wanted to read them to you because they were meaningful to me. And I think when we do those things like that, I think it's just we're in our own little world, we're doing our thing, and it's sometimes nice maybe to step back and go, well, what else is on people's hearts? And so someone put up there that they were asking to receive a miracle and discernment. Just those four words. I think about how much might be contained in those four words, right? And so I don't know who wrote it. I don't know who wrote any of these. But you know, there's someone potentially sitting here today who's looking for a miracle. I think we forget that. I think we kind of come in here and think everyone's having a great life and everyone's just trucking along and things are going just as we hope they would. And we need to remember that right next to us, there might be somebody who needs something much more than that. And could we be aware of that and a part of that? Someone wrote that they were asking to receive a deepened awareness that the work is finished, that what we do is on the base of Christ's work. Now, that's important to remember. Sometimes we forget or we think that maybe what God is asking us to do is to save the world. That's not what God is asking us to do. God is asking us to join in the salvation that God is already doing. If we participate in it, we're not the creators of it, right? That's helpful, because sometimes Christians can get too big of an ego around their service and think that it's all up to us. And this is reminding us of something different. Someone was just simply praying for a spirit of humility. If you think about conflict, dear God, do we not need that desperately? And then someone prayed for or asked to receive new neighbors that we can connect with. Huh. What a beautiful prayer. And I think telling of this church, I think many of you are mindful, especially mindful of your neighbors. And some of you are even longing for God to kind of show you how to be a part of what's happening in your neighborhood. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think that's one of the main things that God invites us to do is to be a part of the place where we are and to join in the work that God is already doing there. And so maybe many of you have this prayer that you would connect with neighbors in a new way. And if that's your prayer, well, then I hope that God answers that prayer, that you are aware of how you might be able to join in, again, what God is already doing. It's really what we're talking about here these next few weeks. We're talking about inhabiting the places where we are. And we're talking about the fact that God already inhabits those places. That God is wherever we are. Because God's promise to us is that God's Spirit lives in us. So wherever you go, whatever place you find yourself in at 11:30 or 3:45, that is where God is as well, inhabiting that space. And that opens up all kinds of possibility if we're open to it. And so for the next number of weeks, we're going to talk about this idea of inhabiting our spaces, our places, rediscovering and being Christ in those places. And today we're going to talk about the need to regain our sight. All right. This week, every once in a while this happens, we had a request come into the branch from someone outside of the branch church who was in need. They had a number of primarily financial needs. This happens again from time to time. Seems to come in waves. We haven't had a request like that outside of the branch for a while. But through Facebook Messenger, of all things, someone reached out to us and said, hey, here's my story, and I could use some help. And I'll tell you what, those stories are tricky to navigate because you don't know the individual at all, right? And we've, I think, at times found that people are really good at making up stories. And we don't find that out until after we've, you know, helped somebody out in some way. So we've, over the years, developed some policies about how we handle those sorts of requests. And we've gotten better at vetting stories and kind of trying to determine, again, if the need is real. And so I met with this person, and as best I could tell, in a, you know, over a cup of coffee, the need seemed legitimate. And so we helped this person out of a fund that we have called the Helping Hands Fund. Did you know that we have this thing called the Helping Hands Fund? Hopefully. Maybe not, though. Maybe you didn't know that. This is a fund specifically designed and meant for helping people at the branch and potentially outside of the branch who have an immediate financial need. And, I think sometimes, actually, I wish that money was used more. I wish that money would, like, only be around for a few months, because it would mean that we were really reaching out and helping people. But sometimes that money just sits in the bank, and it's kind of been just sitting there for a while. So I figured, at the very least, let's empty the bank account. Let's help somebody out here if we can. So we bought this person, you all bought this person a monthly bus pass. They have no transportation. They have doctor's appointments to get to. That was a huge help, and got them some food. So nothing huge, you know, or extravagant, but that fund was there, and it was used to help. And I wanted to tell this story so that, number one, you remembered that this thing existed, so that if you ever have a need, yes, you, or if you know someone who does, that you would come to the stewards and say, hey, is there a way that we can help this person? And sometimes we can't, but if we can, we do. And so I want to share the story so that you all remember that, and because something happened in my encounter with this person that's a little more, you know, funny and lighthearted. So he's telling me about where he grew up, and he grew up not far from here at all. Went to high school very close by, and then was telling me about the church that he most recently went to, which was over, like, in the Clyde Park, Granville Avenue area, right? A neighborhood that has changed a lot, now called Little Mexico often, right? It's really shifted in its demographic. And he said, you know, something to the effect of, you know, yeah, that church, it's in one of the rough parts of town, you know. And I was like, oh, really? He said, yeah, that and Burton Heights. You know, Burton Heights, that's a rough neighborhood. And little does he know, but that's my neighborhood, you know. Essentially, it's where I live. And when he said that, you know, I slammed on the brakes of my car and kicked him out with his bus pass. I made sure he had his bus pass. You know, in the last 12 years that we've lived on the southeast side of Grand Rapids, I've actually been in a lot of conversations with people who, not knowing that I live there, talk about this part of the city and say things like, we make it a point to never drive down Burton. You know, or if we drive down Burton, we always lock our doors, you know. And I get it. I get it. If you haven't lived in the city, and a lot of people, of course, in their life have not lived in the city, it is a very different place to live. It's likely a different group of people that you've probably ever encountered. It is different, no doubt about it. But I'm always struck by the fact that here I'm talking to this person. We've driven down the exact same street. We've seen the exact same buildings, the exact same people. We've stopped at the exact same stoplights. All that we have looked at is the same, and yet we see something very different, right? And it made me think of a quote this week. This is Henry David Thoreau. He says, it's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. Think about that for a moment. It's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. And this quote made me think about something that Jesus said. If you want to grab a Bible, head to Matthew 23. Matthew 23. I'm going to read from the New Living Translation. You can read from whatever translation you'd like, but just letting you know, that's what I'm going to read from here. You know, in Matthew 23, Jesus is not holding back his critique of the religious leaders of his day. It's a pretty brutal chapter. And we're just going to read a couple of verses from it. You can read the whole thing on your own, but he's saying what he thinks about the religious elite, the teachers of religious law, the Pharisees. And in verse 23, Jesus says this, "What sorrow awaits you, teachers of religious law, and you Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are careful to tithe even the tiniest income from your herb gardens, but you ignore the more important aspects of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. You should tithe, yes, but do not neglect the more important things. Blind guides, you strain your water so you won't accidentally swallow a gnat, but you swallow a camel." Jesus is saying, you go to your dill plant or your basil or whatever, and you tear off a couple of leaves in order to tithe the appropriate amount. And that's fine. You should tithe. But you're forgetting the most important aspects of the law, and he calls them blind guides. He says, you're not seeing what is there. We're all looking at the same law. We all have the same scriptures in front of us. But you become blind to what is most important. It's not what you look at that matters. It's what you see. And those verses that Jesus says there in Matthew 23, they remind me of a story found in Matthew 9. Matthew 9:9-10. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at his tax collector's booth. "Follow me and be my disciple," Jesus said to him. So Matthew got up and followed him. And later, Matthew invited Jesus and his disciples to his home as dinner guests, along with many tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. But when the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with such scum?" So it's interesting, Jesus and the religious leaders are looking at the same people, but Jesus sees something very different, doesn't he? The religious leaders look at these folks and they see people to be avoided, and Jesus sees them as people to draw near to. The religious leaders look at these people and see folks devoid of value and worth because of the decisions they've made. Jesus looks at these people and sees children of God, men and women of infinite potential, people loved and cherished by their Maker. You see, it's not so much what you look at that matters, it's what you see. So let me ask you a question. When you look at our world today, what do you see? For me, as of late, I think I've been more and more aware of the fact that when I look at the world today, often I only see what is wrong. Can anybody relate to that? When I look at the world or this city or even aspects of my own life, I easily only see the negative and the dysfunctional. I can focus on how little I have instead of how much has been given to me. Maybe you look at the headlines and the only thing you can see is impending doom. Maybe you look at an issue of injustice that matters to your heart, and what you see is all of the ways that things are wrong. Maybe you look at a relationship that is fractured, and for good reason, all you see is what is not and what never could be. Maybe you look at your job, your responsibilities, and what you see is what is not going your way. Maybe you have a neighbor who, frankly, is a pain. You know, they rake their leaves onto your lawn and that sort of stuff. And all... you did not do that. The wind did that, right? That's right. You know, you look at that neighbor, and all that you see is the things about them that annoy you. And that becomes your entire frame of reference for them. When the Pharisees and the teachers of the law looked at people like tax collectors and prostitutes, the people that Jesus spent time with, all that they could see were troublemakers and lawbreakers and friends of the enemy. Right? They became hyper-focused on everything that was wrong and in turn had become blind to all that was good, or at least all that could be good. The more I study Jesus and look at his life, the more I'm convinced that a significant part of his work and mission in this world was to help you and I regain our sight. To give us the ability to see the world as he sees it. And how does Jesus see the world? Broken? Lost? Sick? Yes. Why does your teacher eat with such scum? When Jesus heard this, he said, healthy people don't need a doctor, sick people do. And then he added, now go and learn the meaning of this scripture. I want you to show mercy, not offer sacrifices. For I have come to call not those who think they are righteous, but those who know they are sinners. Jesus gets it. The world is not as it should be. And so, yes, our hearts should break at injustice. And yes, we should mourn a fractured relationship. The world is not as it should be. And there is so much about this world that is as it should be. You may be tempted to feel like the world is about to drive off of a cliff, but in fact, there is incredible beauty and wholeness and renewal and reconciliation happening all around us every single day. And Jesus sees both. He sees the brokenness and the beauty, the waywardness and the worthiness. And so what if we had eyes like Jesus? What if we regained our sight and began to see and notice those things around us that are already beautiful? What if we had eyes to notice God's work happening right in front of us? What if we could see the ways in which God is inhabiting us and inviting us to inhabit our places so that God's kingdom would come through us? What if we had eyes to see like Jesus? You see, what if you didn't just look at the headlines and saw what they were telling us or what social media was proclaiming to be true? What if we had eyes to see the countless stories of people around us who are coming together, who are laying down their lives for each other? What if we had eyes to see the ways in which divides were being crossed? What if we looked at injustice and saw not only the ways in which it still persisted, but we also had eyes to see the ways in which it was being overcome? And maybe we'd have to look hard and we'd have to search, but what if we had those kinds of eyes? What if we saw where hope and reconciliation had already broken in? You see, what if you looked at that fractured relationship and had eyes to see not just all of the stuff you hate about that person, or had eyes not to only see the pain that's been caused, but you were also able to see the parts of that person that had been or maybe still were a gift? And what if God gave you eyes to see the qualities of that person that were beautiful or the potential that they had to change? What if you had those kinds of eyes? What if that neighbor who raked their leaves into your lawn, what if you had them over for dinner? And around a table, we're given eyes to see that this person was more than just a pain or a nuisance. You see, it's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. And friends, what you see and what you don't see will dramatically shape your life. The religious leaders could only see a part of what was happening all around them, and it led them down a path of death and destruction. That's where that ended up. Ego inflation that got way out of control and led to murder. You say, well, that's an extreme example. Maybe. But what you see and what you don't see, I promise you, will dramatically shape your life. Because when we don't see, we forget. When you and I don't have eyes to see the ways that God is at work around us, when we don't have eyes to see the beauty that is springing up from the ashes, when we can't see the ways that there is reconciliation happening, there is renewal taking place, when we can't see that work of God, then we forget. We forget that God is around us, active, caring about this world, involved in our lives and the lives of people that we love. We forget, and when we forget, we often become quite fearful. What if that neighbor never changes? What if the relationship never gets better? What if my job spirals out of control? What if the headlines are true? What if we are headed for the cliff? And fear begins to really take root in our hearts. And when fear takes root, it leads to disbelief and cynicism and even fatalism. We become hopeless. We become disengaged. Let me say this again. What you see and what you don't see will dramatically shape your life. And so what do? Well, maybe the simplest and maybe the most important step here at the beginning is to ask God to help us regain our sight. To ask God to help us become aware of the beauty around us. And when we see it, to celebrate it, to hold it up, to tell other people about the ways in which heaven has already come to earth. And when we do that, when we see, well, then we remember. When we see the beauty, when we see the reconciliation, when we see life coming up from the dirt, we remember that God is with us and that change is possible. And that hope can remain even in the midst of pain and doubt. We remember these things, and when we remember, it leads us to trust. We trust God more. We move towards God, not away from God. And as trust deepens, it leads to faith and action and hope. Let me say one more time. What you see and what you don't see will dramatically shape your life. So, I'm going to give you some homework. And the good news is that the homework is fairly short. Not every night will be required studying late into the dark hours of the evening. So it's short. The bad news, it's not bad news, it's just the reality, is that this homework will not complete itself magically on its own. You, like every bit of homework, will have to be intentional about completing it. And here's the homework. I want to ask you this week to be intentional about finding the beauty that is around you. I want you to be intentional about finding those places where God's kingdom is already breaking in. One of the things I love about this church is that we're very mindful and ready to act against the ways in which injustice still exists today. That is a beautiful thing about this church. But we have to be people who also have eyes to see the places where the kingdom has already come. If we don't become those people, we will get burned out. And we will not have what is needed in order for us to pursue injustice for long. So, I want you this week to search and to see where reconciliation has taken place, where beauty has sprung up. And to make this more likely to happen, we're just going to like hit the pause button, and I'm going to invite you to take out whatever device or piece of paper or tool might help you actually do this. And I want to invite you, I'm going to give you like 2 to 3 minutes here to schedule something this week where you would take 5 or 10 minutes to actively consider where beauty is already present around you, where heaven has already come to earth. And maybe you're someone that can do that all day, every day. Maybe you're ready to do that. I'm not ready to do that. I need some intentional space to reflect on this. And so when might that be for you this week? Might you get up 10 minutes early one morning? Maybe before going to sleep one night? When would you do that this week? The only song that's coming to mind is the Jeopardy theme song, but that doesn't seem quite right. Dun, 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 dun. So this is just going to have to be a silent moment of scheduling and putting it in. When might you do it this week? I accidentally just scheduled an hour. You don't need to do that. You know, it could be, it could again just be 10 minutes. Maybe you want to take an hour. Maybe you want to take a long walk somewhere. That might be a great way to do it. This doesn't have to happen at a, you know, quiet, dark room where you lock yourself in. Could happen in any sort of space. That's your homework for this week. To be people who start to regain their sight. For the good, good work that God is already doing around us. I want to invite you to pray with me as we close here and move into communion. It's both a prayer of confession and of request. And I want to invite you to just pray this with me, if you would. God, you tell us that you have come near, that you've moved into the neighborhood, and yet we forget. You've said that you're with us until the end of the age, but we don't remember. Our minds lose track of your promise. And still, in spite of our forgetfulness, you remain close. You inhabit this space here and now. But not just this space, God. You inhabit us, making everywhere we go, every place we visit, potentially sacred. Grocery stores and sidewalks, classrooms and dining room tables, cubicle stations and backyards, all are places you inhabit and redeem. Because you've come into this world, God. You've made your home among us. Your spirit is in us. And yet we forget. We lose sight of your nearness. We become distracted. We set our sights on other things. And so would you open our eyes? Would you help us regain our sight? God, remove the veil that we might see your beauty. Give us vision for where your kingdom is already breaking in. And as we see those things, may we be people who celebrate your goodness and who embody your peace and your compassion, because you are near You are with us, moving in and through us in order to inhabit this world. This week, God, may we rediscover Christ all around us. Amen. Can you think back to this meal, the first time that it